Hello and welcome to episode 42 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we'll be talking about game variants and house rules. From Monopoly to Gloomhaven, we'll talk about how house rules and variants have affected our games over the years. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jiljam, Shane Paul, George, and Adam Harrison. And welcome and thank you to Caleb O'Brien, our newest patron. And a huge thank you to all our other patrons as well.
Thanks, Josh. Welcome to our first-time listeners. Welcome back to the rest of our listeners. This is exciting. I'm going to start. We have a contest to talk about. We'll talk about that in just a second. But first, the most important thing, we have an Origins time, date, and room set.
OMG.
It's amazing. What? So if you're at Origins, Columbus, Ohio, I don't know the dates, but
the 14th through 18th.
The 14th through 18th.
Good one, Kitty.
Nice save. Friday at 6 o'clock in room A215. We will be recording live from 6 to 7. Please come. Join us, because otherwise it's just going to be the three of us staring at an empty room.
And we're going to be crying about how there's no one else there.
It's very sad. There's going to be echoes.
We're
going
to bully Sydney and Spencer into pretending like there's a crowd there.
We're going to give them
noises.
They'll just be getting their phones out with like crowd noise in the background.
Hooray, hooray. So we're excited about it. It's going to be our first live show at a convention. Again, that's Friday, 6 o'clock, room A215. It is not on the grid, as most of their stuff for the seminars and that kind of thing are not on their grids for whatever reason. So we will tweet it out. We will put it on all the social media. We'll try to make sure everyone knows. So, but if you're there, try to join us. In fact, if you're there and you say, hey, Chris, I'm joining you only because I heard you on the podcast, there will be t-shirts, buttons, pins, and magnets, and you will get at least one of those things, maybe all three.
Whoa.
I know. It depends. I mean, if we get a huge crowd, I only have so many t-shirts. But so anyway, speaking of conventions that we'll be at, Gen Con, August 18th, 6 o'clock, we will also have a live show. That'll be our second one. So if you can't make it to Origins, that's all right. The second one's probably going to be better anyway.
I'm not going to be there, so no, it's not.
Actually, way better, I bet. Way
so
better.
Better.
It's going to be lame.
We're going to iPad you in.
Oh, sweet. So, yeah.
We're going to put FaceTime Josh on the desk.
I'm loving it.
Yeah, we're just going to keep referring to as FaceTime Josh.
Yeah, I can do that.
So those are our announcements. Speaking of Origins, June 14th, which is the start of Origins, that's that Wednesday, we will be the deadline for our Mechs versus Minions giveaway. If you haven't entered by then you don't have a chance of winning, so enter. How do you enter, you ask? Great question. TabletopGameTalk.com, and then click on the giveaway button and follow the directions from there. And we will announce the winner at our live show. If you happen to be at the live show and the winner, then statistically speaking, that's just insane. But I will give it to you right then and there. If you're not, I'll mail it to you.
And they should get like a special bonus prize of being there at the same time. I don't know, like a pack of gummy bears or something at least.
And you will get a pack of gummy bears in addition to the Mechs versus
I did Minions. It for you guys. I did it for you.
Josh, you are responsible for having the gummy bears on hand.
I'll sort it out.
All right. Perfect. All right. Let's just jump right into Kickstarters because this one's a short one. Cool Mini or Not is at it again, or Simon. Zombicide Green Horde. Now, I've not backed any of the other Zombicides. I don't own any Zombicides. I have played Zombicide. For those who don't know, Zombicide is a cooperative game where you're fighting against zombies. And you're trying to shoot zombies, but you're trying to be quiet because noise attracts the zombies and the zombie hordes keep coming at you. Well, apparently last year, Zombicide Black Plague was a fantasy version of the zombie apocalypse, which is kind of cool because zombies and fantasy is usually very different than modern age zombies. So they're like, okay, we're going to have a fantasy zombies. And this is Zombicide Green Horde is ogre zombies.
Ooh.
So ogre or orcs, both fantasies. They have goblins and
does undead orcs here.
Orcs. So orcs zombies. And that's where the green horde comes in because they're green.
Right.
Most zombies are green.
Makes
but
sense,
this yeah. one's a horde. Anyway, it looks really cool. It's the standard CMON pledge is $120, and then you just get a whole ton of Kickstarter exclusives. If you like Cool Mini or Not games, then you should always back their Kickstarters, because you're getting probably about two times as much value as you would if you didn't back it and just bought it retail. So if it's something you're interested in, or if you're looking for co-op games, this is one to take a look at. It's very highly regarded as a good co-op game. In fact, we've had a number of questions asking about co-op games. Zombicide is a good co-op game to go get if you want that, and if you're at all interested in zombies. So let's just jump right to feedback.
All right, let's get to some feedback about past episodes. If you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG.
Yep, we've got something from Steve here. He says, I wanted to jump into your discussion of long games. I built a gaming table with the vault specifically for this purpose. Now, by vault, I think he's talking about the depressed thing in the middle of a table, right? Specifically for this purpose, and I usually have a game set up in it at all times, sometimes two. But that is because I play a lot of games with my son. We both live in the same apartment, and it makes it easy to say, we have an hour, let's jump back into our game. With the gaming group I am trying to start, it only meets once a month. So any game we play until completion. So I think it boils down to how often you play. If it's every day or a couple of times a week, then having a place to leave games set up is a great tool. If you play once a week or less, then you probably won't use it that much. At least that's his experience.
Yep. And I think that's probably pretty true. Like, I really want like a geek chic gaming table there, like the original gaming table. And now there's a lot of other ones too that you can get for not super cheaper. Like these things are custom made, so they're fairly expensive. But I'm like, oh, I want it so bad. But would I use it enough to justify spending $2,500 on a table? Well, a typical nice kitchen table is costing you close to that much anyway. Maybe I justify it that way. Mm-hmm. Eventually, I'm going to get one, though, because
just to have it. Yeah, because you said last episode you didn't really use this one that much. But
this one has a very small inset,
though. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's just not big enough.
It's just not
big enough. He just needs a better table. That's, yeah. And then he'll bigger, use it.
I need a bigger, better table.
Okay. That's totally the reason. I agree.
All right. From Steven Seitz. He asked about co-op games a few episodes back. I made my latest post for your next episode prior to listening to the last podcast. I have no idea what that means.
Basically, this was the one where we were talking. He was asking, had played a co-op game, and we were recommending co-op games, and I mentioned Gloomhaven. So, continue.
All right. I do have Gloomhaven coming in August and would like to get my wife into it. Time will tell, but I did purchase Pandemic Legacy. We just finished playing four games tonight, two-player, three of which were victories. It was so cool and a lot of fun, and we really enjoyed opening the compartments. It's like counting down to Christmas, and the boxes as well.
Yep. And so I think that's one of the most fun about the Legacy games. It's your favorite part of it.
It is. Yeah.
Now, you know, season two, I'm going to have to wrestle some of that away from you, because I'm like, actually, wait, I did kind of miss out on that. I didn't even think about it at the time. But
I opened all of the windows.
She totally did, and we just kind of let her. You know, it wasn't like she bullied us or anything. She just did it, and we didn't say
I'm
anything.
I'm that charming.
Yeah.
You did it, yeah.
A trick to life, if you just assume that you're the person that should be there or should be doing something.
Should be opening.
Nobody's going to question it.
Yeah. No, we didn't. I will question it next time, though. I'm ready for season two.
I just started doing it, and then from then on, it was like, oh, this is my job.
Yep,
I like it.
The best fun job. Yep.
Yep. Gloomhaven has a ton of unlockables as well. There's tons of story places that you can branch out to, so you get that feel. Any of the Legacy games are going to have that, but even something like Above and Below or Now Near and Far, that story aspect of that discovery, it's like you're not opening up envelopes, but you're still discovering new things as you play through. You'll kind of get that same feel. I think I mentioned in passing on a previous episode that I want to do an episode on virtual tabletops, and both Steve and Michael reached out on Board Game Geek to say, hey, count me in for that. So, Steve, Michael, I will be taking you up on this. There's a lot going on right now, but at some point I'm going to learn how to use Vassal. I'm less excited about it because I have used it a little bit. Someone will teach me how to make it not as clunky. but like Tabletopia, that one I'm really looking forward to. And there's some other ones too, some 2D ones that are a little bit more play by mail that are interesting. So you don't have to worry about the virtual manipulating things in virtual. And then a friend of Kitty's, this is feedback via text message, and we thought it was so nice that we're gonna throw it on there. So this is me reading it to Kitty as if I were Megan.
You look just like her.
I do. And this is in response to our bringing new gamers into the hobby. So it's just a really great episode, and I appreciate you guys focusing on new gamers, because so often I feel my friends have this non-inclusive idea around their gaming. And I also liked it because it made me less afraid to game. Like, I know you and Spencer are really serious gamers, and I always thought, I can't game with them because I'm not serious enough. And it'd be a burden. And I even talking about, remember, this is a text message. Like that you're talking about the differences between competitive games and cooperative games was a really interesting point, because I totally never realized, but I do shut down if I think someone is fake coaching me. Anyway, props to the four of you.
Thanks, Megan. That was really sweet. Really, I loved it. I think me and Chris both went, when we read it.
Yeah. And I think that's something to be aware of, like when you're bringing new people in, the fake coaching thing, to here, do this, let me play the game for you. You have to really be conscious of that, because it's easy to do accidentally as well.
It really is. Also, it was kind of weird to hear myself categorized as a serious gamer, because I don't necessarily see myself that way. But I guess, you know, being a host on a tabletop game talk podcast.
No, I agree with you, though. Already. I always felt like we were the traffic lights. You know, Chris is like the hardcore red gamer. You're an amber and I'm a total green.
I honestly think that Kitty's more of a serious gamer than I am.
What?
I like gaming and I like learning systems and all that. Uh-huh. But I take a very laid back approach to my games. Kitty will punch people.
I will not punch people.
But you feel like she's going to punch you.
Oh, yeah. I'm nervous when she's upset.
I'm the same. I'm very nervous, yeah. No, but I see what you mean now, but that's a different kind of serious.
It is a different kind of serious.
Right, right.
Together we make one really serious gamer.
Now, I don't think it takes us a whole lot to be a serious gamer, besides just having an open mind and being willing to learn new games.
That can, I guess, be intimidating, though, because it does, like, seem like, even though I don't see myself as that serious gamer, to the outside, if I look that way, you know, I may be learning a game at the same time as someone else. But because, and we've talked about this before, the more you learn rules of games, the easier it is to learn new games. So you look like you're just picking it up super fast. And in a way you are, because you're already familiar with things like this. And it's like, just building on that base of knowledge. And it can be kind of tough to be the person who's like, all right, no, I need you to go back over the rules a few times. I need more help with this, you know.
But it's like any skill. Like, you're a crocheter, right? Crochet?
Yes.
And knit as well. But
yes.
But crocheting is
all
like
the things.
All the things. But when you first started doing that, it wasn't like you were just instantly good at it. But
no, now I did a lot wrong.
Right. But now you can do more and more complicated patterns because you have something to build on.
Yes.
And you can be away from it for a while and you can come back and it just comes out. Like, gaming's the same way. It's just a fun hobby you can do. Any sport is like that. It's like, you know, it's just try it and keep doing it, and eventually you get good at it, and it's like, oh yeah, this is no big deal.
Well, there's so much variety as well. It's not like everything is a hardcore game, so you know, you really can just dip your toe into something easy and fun.
The only thing I think that makes it a bit harder than some of those other hobbies you were mentioning is you need other people to do it.
Yeah,
and that can be the toughest part, is finding people to play with.
Yep. But
so, anyone who wants to play with me, I'm here.
Yes. And we have a couple people. So we have a game with Christy and a game with Mike at Origins set up. So if anyone else is coming to Origins and you guys want to play a game, we will, like, again, we'll be on the Twitters. we'll be checking email, so you can email us. Facebook message. Email tabletopgametalk@gmail.com or follow me at Game Master Chris or tabletopgametlk on Twitter. So we're looking forward to playing as many games as we can at Origins. All right.
Let's go to a question from one of our listeners. This is a question that won't fill an entire show topic, but we think is interesting nonetheless. Today's question comes from Neelan. For story-based games, do you think it's ever appropriate to read The Choice Not Taken? We debate this a lot when playing games where you have to make storytelling choices. Someone always wonders what would have happened if we had chosen the other option. But I feel like it's more thematic not to know. Thoughts?
Yeah, so this is things like, you know, Above and Below. Or it could even be any of the legacy games where it's like we chose this and it canceled out that. Gloomhaven has a lot of that. You know, you have to make a choice, and there's two story blurbs on the back of the card. What do you guys think about this?
I mean, I was always the kid with the choose your own adventure who had like my fingers and bookmarks like on every page so that I could go back. I didn't want to start from the beginning. So I like curiosity always gets me. I'm like, I want to know, but I know some people aren't quite like that.
I'm the same way. Yeah. I'm totally. Read the choice not taken, scratch off all of the cards that you didn't use, read it all. I mean, what's it going to spoil?
Yeah, I have. So, and this will actually play into a comment for our topic. But for me, it's a little different depending on the type of thing I'm playing. With a board game like Gloomhaven, if I'm making a choice on the front of the card and we turn it over and it's like, okay, so I'm going to read the story that goes with the card that the choice that we made, and this is what we get. And then I will say, you know, because the group we're playing with, we're always a little bit curious. And these cards are removed, so you're not going to be able to access something unless you played it all over again. So oftentimes, I'll do a quick glance. It's like, oh, the other one was worse, or the other one was better. You know, just to not necessarily read the story, because I think that will take you out of the actual conclusion, but just glancing at the reward. It's like, right. Oh, you gained a prosperity. Yeah, if we'd done the other one, we would have lost 2 reputation. You know, and it's like, okay, we made the right choice. Or, oh, we start the mission poisoned. Yeah, the other one would have given us a check mark.
I see what you mean. It definitely would sort of break in that sort of role-playing setting. Yeah, the kind of being immersed right. in the story.
So for that one, I kind of split the difference. There are some cards. So when this is not spoilers, it's part of the rules. But when you retire characters and unlock new characters, you'll add their character cards, event cards to both the road and city deck. So when we get those cards, we're actually like following up on the story of these characters we played forever. So we make our choice, we play that out, and then we definitely read through the other option completely because like we were attached to these characters. Like, oh, what would we have done if we'd made that other choice? It's like, oh, yep, that's what that character would have done for sure.
Nice.
So that's kind of fun. However, for role-playing games, when I'm DMing and someone says, what would have happened had we done this? My answer is legitimately, I have no idea. You didn't do that.
Because it kind of plays into Josh's point of the choose your own adventures, because it's not just one choice leads to one conclusion. It's one choice leads to another choice, to another choice, to another choice.
Like branches of a tree just fanning out, yeah.
So in that case, yeah, you can't really know what would have happened necessarily even, but when it's just like A or B, here's a consequence. Yeah. I want to know if I picked A, I'm living with A. That is my choice. I just want to know what B is. Yeah,
just what was B.
Yeah.
Yep. So, all right, well, let's go get on topic. Cause I think this one's going to be a long one.
In this episode, we're talking about game variants and house rules. When is it okay to play by your own rules? Does it break the spirit of the game or make it better? When do you decide your rules are better? Let's talk about it.
Yeah. I think you have to start with Monopoly.
Yeah, totally. That's the first game that comes to mind as an early experience where, you know, just so much rule breaking happens. Oh, yeah.
Not even just like rule breaking, but not even knowing the rules.
Right.
Who reads Monopoly's rules?
Yep. I was almost going to buy a copy of Monopoly so we could have the rules, but I think I know what the rules are. I just know I've never played by them.
Isn't there like a really famous one? I always feel like we've had this conversation, Chris, where you always say, oh, no one ever plays this rule. And now I've forgotten what it is. Is it?
To me, it's the auction rule. I've never played Monopoly using the auction rule.
And so explain it for people who have no idea.
Right? So Monopoly essentially plays as you expect. And this is going to be funny because I'm going to actually explain how Monopoly plays. And I'm going to be teaching people.
Yeah.
Because most people don't know these particular rules. Right. So Monopoly is a roll and move game. Roll 2 dice, move that many steps. If you land on a property and that property is available, you can buy it for the listed price. If you don't buy it, it goes up for auction. And starting with the player on your left, they can bid any amount, and you can continue to bid all the way around until the bidding stops, and then that property is sold for that amount. Double check my rules. So Kitty just brought up the Monopoly rules online.
Of course. Surprising
to be there. So she's going to correct me if I'm wrong on this. But so then that way, no property has to be landed on more than once, and every property is going to be purchased right away. Regardless, it might be purchased for $1, but someone is going to buy that property.
It's crazy because that really would change the game a lot.
It completely changes it because now the properties are getting like cycled through very quickly at that point.
Yeah.
So once you have them, in, like trading is fine and all that's fine. Any money that's paid is paid to the bank. Many people will pay it to free parking. And if you land on free parking, you get all the money that was paid for whatever, you know, getting out of jail or right. paying taxes or whatever. That increases the amount of money that goes into the game, which also lengthens the game. But both of these rules, like the auction rule, I think it was just kind of complicated. Like it was a clunky mechanic.
You can still bid even if you were the person yes. who landed on it. Yeah.
Yep.
They didn't know that.
So yep. wait, hang on. So you land on it.
Yes.
You decide not to buy it. And then you bid on it.
Yeah. So say I have $200.
Yeah.
Kitty has $100 and you have $50.
Right.
And the property costs me $350. I'm like, I'm not going to buy this.
Oh.
Kitty can bid.
Goes to auction by the banker.
Yep.
The banker can, I believe it starts at any price.
And then you're instantly going to get it at cheap. If you have the most money and it's cheap, the amount of money that's the most is less than the amount that's, that the property's
exactly.
worth, you're going to get it for cheap.
Exactly.
Yep.
Oh, crazy. This is blowing my mind.
Yep. And so, and then just get rid of free parking. Free parking is literally a dead space. Okay. Nothing happens on that space when you land on it.
A player landing on this space does not receive any money, property, or reward of any kind. This is just a free resting place.
Yep. But normally people put a big pile of money there.
Mostly you start, the way I always played it when I was growing up is you put $200 on it.
Right.
And then any money that was paid to the bank would also go on it.
Whoa,
so you could be
I've
like,
never played
oh,
like that.
I've never played with all the money paid to the bank.
House rules, okay, right?
Right.
So what happened there is when you land on it, you get all this like windfall of money. And so you might have been knocked out, which would have ended the game early. But now it's like, I'm Mr. Moneybags. I'm going to buy everything. There's also deals that you have to pay rent if you land on someone's property. You don't have a choice, and that person cannot choose to not have you pay rent. But oftentimes that's in like, you know, side deals where it's like, oh, I'll give you two passes on Boardwalk if you trade me Park Place or something like that. You know, so those kind of deals are also against the rules of Monopoly.
Wow, I don't think I ever did those kind of deals either. Like, I think I played pretty close to the rules without the auction thing. I used to slip money, like, hide money that I had. And that was more of a meta game kind of
tactic. Yeah, that's just the mattress.
Yeah, exactly. But I enjoyed
you
that.
You can even, like, stack your money carefully.
And then yeah, because I wanted to hide from people how much I had.
Well,
and
I would set it aside so I didn't spend it all.
Oh,
pull it out later when I need to buy that hotel.
That's a good idea.
I mean, this is where I feel like my OCD totally gets me because I want my money laid out facing the same way, ones, fives.
She's facing her bills.
I am. And it's all set up. Like I'm usually the banker because I am like this. So, but I have mine set out like a mini bank, which means that everyone at the table knows exactly what I have. So, and then I can't stack it up. I can't hide it. I can't shuffle it together. Like my sister would always just have like this big pile of money. She's like pulling bills out of them. Like, where did that one come from? And she's like, well.
Let's see. How did you guys play the mortgage rule? Like unmortgaging?
Oh, is this when you have to sell your stuff?
There's a price on the back that says unmortgage by paying this. And that's.
Is that it? I thought there was math on one of them. I know like the. Luxury tax, you're paying 10% or $200, whatever's greater. So then you have to count up all your asset value and figure out 10% of that decide if that's worth more than $200.
I had no idea so much math was involved.
Oh, there's a lot of math in Monopoly.
Oh, wow.
Only unimproved properties can be mortgaged.
Yes, you have to sell all your houses and hotels back before you can mortgage a property.
I don't even think you can sell your...
I thought you could. Played that house rule where you could sell...
Buildings and properties must be sold back to the bank for half price.
Yep. And you can only give... Like, you can only pay somebody in mortgage property. So you have to mortgage the property first. And if you still can't afford it, then you can give them the mortgage property as part of payment. And then that person who receives the mortgage property has to pay to unmortgage it.
Right. Yep. I have no idea.
So, yeah. There's a lot of rules in Monopoly. Nobody reads them.
Yeah, it's the mortgage is the bank amount plus 10%.
Yep. I knew there was a 10% in the mortgage amount. So, yeah. So that's Monopoly. And that's where it all started. Because I learned to play Monopoly in the 70s.
Right.
And I never learned to play it by the rules. I did not even know the rules were different until I was in college. Like, had no idea.
That's crazy.
Like, everyone just knows how to play Monopoly.
Oh, there's short game rules.
I think those might be newer rules.
But there's been so many variants of that game as well. You know, we're talking
about... the short game rules, it's hand out all the properties, right? Deal out all the properties.
Dead Space.
I know. That was great. Suspense.
Oh, boy. So you only need 3 of the properties instead of 4. Then you may buy a hotel. If you land in jail,
there are only three.
Three houses instead of 4. Sorry.
That makes more sense.
Now there we go. I can't.
That was the best of the silences right there. We did a good job.
We're doing great on these. No, but there's
I'm trying to read really quickly, guys. Sorry. 3 houses instead of 4 for a color group to get the hotel. If you land in jail, you get out on your next turn.
Yeah, I can see that as being quick.
But I haven't actually played any of the variants. Like, have you guys played Monopoly variants at all?
Most of the variants are re-themes with just different words and properties.
Because isn't there one that everyone's like, oh, this one's actually good, and like you just have the cards or something?
So there are, well, Monopoly Deal is the Monopoly IP, but not the Monopoly game. It works a little. It's a very, very different game.
Oh, okay. See, that's what I'm thinking of. But it's the theme of Monopoly.
But it's not the same game of Monopoly.
So you wouldn't call it a variant.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So that is our gratuitous Monopoly conversation. We've all learned a little bit. We're all better for it.
Well, it's like a curse word in the gaming community. Yeah. I know.
A lot of people who say if you play it by the actual rules, it's really not that bad. I would tend to agree with that. Okay. I think that the rolling and moving is the part that's really out of your control. So there's a lot of luck involved in it. But the luck is the equalizer of it as well. It's why you can play it from 7 years old to 70 years old, and it's kind of like an equal playing field.
Yeah.
You know, so that luck is not necessarily a bad thing.
A lot of fun for families, yeah.
Yep. So why would we want to house rule a game? Like, how do we think that, because I honestly don't know, but how do you think like the first Monopoly started having these variant rules that everyone played by?
I mean, a lot of them happen by accident. Like we were just mentioning, if you're playing with a family and you've got children and, you know, the kid is kind of, maybe they're a bad loser and they get really angry when they lose or something. And you're like, okay, he's about to go bankrupt. I'll do him a deal. You know, I'll say, you can give me one of your properties or whatever it was, those deals that you're mentioning before. And I imagine a lot of these things either happen like that or just by accident.
Yeah. Well, I could see the free parking being like, it's kind of boring that this doesn't do anything.
Right.
Let's put some money on it.
Yeah. Up the stakes. Then it's like thrilling. Ooh, if I land on this. Yeah, that makes sense. That was part of the fun of that space.
Yeah. So partly to make it easier for people, partly to make it more fun.
Yeah.
Because I ask, and legitimately ask, is because I think that when you start looking at house rules for other games, we start looking at why do we house rule these games? Why are these variants?
I think sometimes it's just a lack of clarity in the actual rules. You kind of have to, all right, so this is a little vague. This is how we play it here.
Yep, make a decision and go with it.
Yeah.
Yep. No, it makes total sense. So let's, I'm going to jump way forward and say Gloomhaven.
Okay.
Now, Gloomhaven is a role-playing game in a box. And the rules are about as thick as your early-aged role-playing games. Like, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of, like, 60 pages or something like that.
Yep.
And there's a lot of nuances to these things. And it's very easy to miss certain things. It's also, it's because you have so many rules, it's easy to say, I don't like that rule. Or this is kind of doesn't feel good. Or this isn't thematic or something. So you start changing little things.
So are those 60 pages just pure rules? And then there's like another book for like all the story and the flavor and stuff? Oh, wow.
There's like 4 books in that game.
Whoa, that's crazy.
There's a rule book. There's a scenario book. There's the map. There's the town records book, which you have to unlock. And then the town records book also has story.
But why is it 60 pages? What's in 60 pages of a rule book? Like, I don't even understand.
So, how monsters move.
Okay.
Like, so that's a big thing. Like, the AI behind the monsters.
Okay.
How the characters play, how different effects that your character can suffer work, the interactions of things, the progression of your character when you get experience points, how to spend gold, how the town campaign works, how stickers work, how unlocking things work.
Okay. How many monsters to put in a room?
How many monsters? How the elemental control works? All of these things are different variants. or different rules that apply. Right. The fact that you can't give characters, you can't give other teammates money or items. You know, this is something that's prohibited in the rules.
Right.
And some of these rules are for balance purposes. Some of them are theme. Mostly it's for balance. So that's when you start looking. It's like, eh, I don't really like the fact that we can't share loot.
Right.
It's not very thematic. We're fighting together. Why does it matter that you picked up this coin versus me? It's like, if it works for us, why not? The story, like, reasoning behind it is you're all mercenaries. You're all up for yourself. And if we all went to work and said, oh, you got a bonus, you got a $200 bonus, I wouldn't expect you to give me that $200 just because we work together.
Right.
So that's the idea behind this, which thematically, like, okay, you might be able to accept that. And for our game, we play that way where you can't just give money to each other.
Okay.
But one thing you have to do if you want to get an item to someone is you have to sell it back to town for half price and someone else has to buy it for full price.
Right.
Well, this one doesn't make sense to us. Because if I am working with you and I have this fancy new computer and I'm going to sell it for $200 to some town and some other guy's going to sell it to you for $400, I might as well just give it to you for $200.
Right. Yeah.
So that's one of the house rules we use in Gloomhaven is we can sell to each other for the same price that we could sell to town.
It's kind of interesting because it's like meant to be sort of like a hybrid between like a role-playing game and a board game. And I know there was like on the threads, I think it was, I want to say Michael and Terrence as well, were talking about, you know, how Michael was saying, I think, how he likes to stick to the rules very stringently in board games. But with RPGs, obviously, he's much more open to changing things, being flexible. And there was this whole debate between Tim and Terrence saying, well, yeah, I mean, that the reason in a role-playing game, why you want to be more flexible is because of your storytelling. You know, we're like living in this world and we don't want it to be too rigid because we want us to all build this like fantastic story that could go in any direction. So I guess that makes sense to me that Gloomhaven is kind of ripe for that. Like, no, let's not be too strict with this. Let's change it up, do it how we want.
Yep, make it our game, the game that we're playing. And there's a ton of variants for Gloomhaven. And some of them are extremes. You see a lot on Board Game Geek. They have entire sections on variants for these games. And you see people like, I'm thinking of doing this. What do you think of this or that? And people give you feedback on it. You always have the people who are like, well, you could do it that way, or what's my favorite? It's like, you do you. I'm going to play by the rules. Which is a just a simple way of saying, play by the rules. And they're probably not playing by the rules either. Honestly, they're probably doing something wrong. There's 60 pages of rules.
Yeah.
I think that's where a lot of house rules really are born, is from misunderstandings.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's interesting you say there's like this huge community of like variants and, you know, that you can just go and find, because like, you know, before the internet, you'd have to go to a convention and you'd have to talk to someone and say, oh no, me and my, you know, group, we play it like this. And then you'd find out, oh yeah, that'd be a great way to play it. Now you can go on Board Game Geek and there's threads and forums of just how to play it in a different way. And you can kind of go and discover all those ways that people have come up. So it's kind of like crowdsourcing these house rules now. It's such there's a few of them.
Like, I will pull particular variants for games. Like, Gloomhaven, again, is one where I've done the most house rules. But we'll talk about Zaya and Too Many Bones as well. One of them is there's a particular wand that allows you to create an element. Well, by the rules, if you create an element on your turn, you can't use it on your turn. Someone else can. Right. Later in the round, but you can't. Like, but if you have a wand that is meant to create an element, then it just makes sense that you should be able to use it on your turn. And there's a potion that does the same thing. So our house rule is, if you have an item that creates an element of some sort, you can immediately use that, because otherwise it doesn't make any sense for the magic users to have that. You'd want everyone else to have it to feed the magic users. But we're mercenaries and we're not supposed to be doing that. So we're like, okay, we're going to adopt this particular house rule. There's other ones where the magic system, when you put elements out there, they're on the board for two turns. So they're waxing, waning, and then off. And so you constantly have to shuffle these elements back and forth. That one we just kind of got completely, just did away with it, because we kept forgetting to move those around.
Right.
So what we do is, when there's an element, we put the element token on the board. And as soon as someone uses it, we remove it. We don't have a waxing and waning at all. There is a couple items that require it. So there is a flip side. I can flip it over and say it's been on the board for more than one turn, so it negates the particular item. But that aside, it makes it a whole lot easier just to manage the elements. But the monsters also benefit from it as well. You know, so we benefited early on.
So that balances each other. So it's a rule that's applying equally to everyone.
Yep.
Whereas one of our things, what game was it we were playing? It was you, me, and Sydney. It's asymmetrical start. We were all trying to do things. You're just staring at me.
Really?
No. So when we were battling each other, and you were supposed to get two victory points for every battle you won.
Yep. So this was, I finally got to play Cry Havoc.
Yeah.
Uh-huh, nice. And this is the game that Kitty's explaining. And in that particular game, you get 2 points whenever you win a battle. And we didn't play it right.
We completely forgot about this rule for easily, I think, about a third of the game.
At least.
And then we figured it out. We were like, oh, well, we'll just house rule it for the rest of this game.
That we don't do
it. You don't get those 2 points. It'll equally affect everyone. But then we realized because the races were so different that it was really messing up Sydney's score. Sydney was so far behind us because she had won so many more battles than we had, because that's what her race people did, do. Yeah.
Oh, I see. So it really affected her game and scoring. And
one
everything.
Person more than others, even though we were applying it equally to everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone is not starting equally, so it doesn't work that way.
Right.
Yeah. That's one of the things you have to be really careful when you house rule things. Another thing we do in Gloomhaven, and this was accidental, so this was an accidental house rule that we just decided to stick with, is when you summon something, the summons use monster rules for movement and attacking. And we played that the summons just did whatever we needed them to do. They could move a certain amount, they could attack, and we could decide what to do with them. And we continue to play that way, even after I read that, oh, no, that's not how they're supposed to work. We continue to play this way. But there is a caution on the board because there's been a threads on, well, what if you controlled the summons, which is how I've figured out that we were doing it wrong. And there's a warning saying, well, you could do that, but there's other classes that you'll unlock that will be over, like, they will benefit way more from that than if they were, the summons had to follow the trigger rules. So it's like, all right, we're aware of this. We'll let that go. If it comes up, we'll deal with it when we meet it. But right now we're having fun doing it. And it was just how we got used to playing it. So that's what we do there.
It's interesting because it's like these examples are kind of where you did something by accident and, you know, it could be that you kind of break it at some point, you know, like with the Sydney thing. And then the examples before were where games kind of come out, and I suppose part of it's to do with the industry. They come out kind of a little bit rough around the edges. It's like an idea that's been brought to market oftentimes by maybe just one person's vision.
Yep.
And, you know, they'll try and playtest as much as possible, but there's real variance in how much a designer playtests. You know, some people are great at it and do a lot of it. Some people don't. And so it gets to market and people buy it and it's like, this game's almost there, but there's something broken about it. If we just change this rule here or this change rule there, then this is a great game suddenly.
Yep.
And that's kind of cool in a way because it's like the community's like honing these games even after they come out.
So Too Many Bones, this is going to be my example for this.
Okay.
The game itself is phenomenally produced. Like it's so cool.
Right.
And every component is upgraded to the max. To the detriment of some of the colors are hard on the materials they chose to make, but that aside, there's just so much there. It is almost like a single bad initiative roll, though, can make you lose an entire battle. And so it's so random where it's like, oh, we started the battle and I'm dead before I even get to do anything.
Right.
So those kind of flaws are kind of, they're detriments to enjoying the game. If you lose, you get no reward. So, but the game keeps getting harder as you move through. So you lose a couple battles and now you're so far behind that you couldn't possibly win the game anymore. So you might as well just stop playing.
Right.
But everyone wants this game to be fun and it is fun when it works. It's just when it doesn't, that's the problem.
Right.
So in this kind of case, like you'll see variants where if you lose, you don't advance the day count for how difficult the next scenario is. So the scenarios level with you. They don't level past you.
Okay.
Or you get to advance your character even if you lose. You still get a training point so that you are kind of staying up with things. With initiative, there's been all kinds of different ways where saying, well, if you spend a life point, you can raise your initiative by one. Or if you exhaust this particular die, you can raise your initiative and kind of manipulate that. So there's ways of working around those things that people are trying to come up with to make the game feel more fair each time you play it. And, you know, 10 years ago, well, maybe not 10, 15 years ago, you'd never see a game like this. But if that were a problem before, people would play it and they just kind of play it how it is. And you'd either like it or not like it. maybe you would change it.
Well, I think then this sounds a little bit like Risk to me, where if you start off poorly in Risk, like you're just rolling those die, your guys are dying everywhere. You can't get that one country you need to get a card on your first turn, and you've spent all of your guys trying to do it, and then somebody else just comes in and almost wipes you out, but you're just hanging on there. I felt like that was kind of a fun place to be sometimes, because then you just get to be like wild card. Yeah. Like, I'm just going to mess with other people's games. But
you still get to play, you still got to roll the dice.
Yes.
In this game, it can be to the point where you don't even
get a turn. Oh, wow. That's not fun anymore.
Right.
So. I'm thinking of that, another game like that, the Yu-Gi-Oh card game that you showed us. And it was just like, oh, this game's over already. But yeah, it's funny how a strong IP where it's got this big fan base can just carry a game like that. It's like, wow, this game is so bad in our opinion. and yet all these people love it because I'm assuming because it's Yu-Gi-Oh, right?
Yeah.
Because it's a really tough game to even play sometimes.
Yeah. Yep. Well, and then so Zaya, Zaya is one of the 4X space games that I really like. There's 20 hexes and a sun. So there's 21 little system hexes, and you reveal the hexes as you're moving around. There's hexes on top of the hexes. So that's how you count movement and all of this. Zaya is a very random game. Everything you do, you roll a die. So if I have a D6 engine and I say I'm going to activate my engines, I roll a D6, and that's how many spaces I can move. I can choose whatever direction, but I can also get a D8 and then a D12 and a D20 engine. Now, D20s are super, well, not a D20 engine, you D20 missiles, but D12 versus D6, D12s are really super swingy. If I roll 3 12s in a row, I can get anywhere on the map. If I roll 3 ones, it's like, why do I even have this D12 engine? Right. You know, and so that swinginess is something where it just, it kind of levels out as long as your die rolls are leveling out, but you can feel really like the dice are just against
like
me.
Like you've been cheated almost, yeah.
Yep. Another mechanic in here that I don't like and will probably the next time I play it just house rule it out completely, is if you ever roll a 20 and a d20, you automatically get a victory point. Mm-hmm. Well, you play to a certain number of victory points, anywhere from 10 to 20, you just choose the number. A single victory point is a ton. And if somebody gets lucky and rolls 2 or 3,
right,
you know, like, and it's happened, you're listening, you know it has, where you roll 3 20s and you're 3 points ahead and no one else has rolled a 20, but you win by just one victory point, the person who lost is like, okay, you won, but only because of that random roll.
There was no skill in that.
Right. Yeah. So like taking that out of the equation is something that it's like, well, we don't need that D20 in there. It's cool. You can let all the other effects happen.
I feel like some catch-up mechanic can be just like that. There was that Star Trek
deck-building game.
Deck-building game. And the catch-up mechanic was just overpowered. I was way in last place, and as soon as I got that card, I just started like obliterating everyone.
Yep.
So yeah, I can see people maybe being like, this card is overpowered. Let's take that out.
Well, but Zaya is a great game, and playing it as the rules are out of the box, that's the only way I've ever played it, and I've always had fun. I want to change the D20. I also want to find a way of changing the randomness a little bit, but
I would maybe house rule it so that the first D20 you roll, like the first 20 you get, you're like, yes, victory point, but you don't keep getting them.
Yeah,
that seems a little.
Honestly, that is exactly the thing I think I settled on when I was like, well, you should get rid of that. Maybe the first 20, maybe just a limit. Because
it is really fun when you roll the 20.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's something about it.
Yep. Or if like do like Pathfinder D&D 3.5, where it's like you roll the 20, but now you have to confirm the victory point. And you have to roll it again. You have to roll higher than a 10 to get the victory point. You know, so it like adds another level of randomness into.
And that's another level of thrill as well. Yeah.
But the point of these games, though, is if you do house rules, you have to decide ahead of time that you're going to do them, and you have to enforce them very strongly. You can't sometimes do them and sometimes not. You have to say, this is how we're playing it. So the first 20 you roll in the game, you get a victory point. Any additional 20, you don't get a victory point. And that is now the rule. It's not that it's an optional thing you can decide mid-game. It's like, this is the rule we're playing by. The designer of Zaya actually encourages modding the game. There's a ton of really cool components in here. And if people want a different way of playing it, he's like, awesome, great. Like, more than willing to open up to different kinds of rule sets and stuff, because it makes what's in that box all the more valuable. Gloomhaven, you know, Isaac, who's the designer of Gloomhaven, released all of the background components for all the cards, all the scenarios. Like, he wants the community to make new things for that game, new character classes, new stuff. He wants it to grow. Like, that's cool. You know, so those kinds of things are, it's fun when a designer says, yes, take it and let's see where it goes.
Yeah.
And then you see it sometimes going into expansions.
I saw that we did get a vote for my crayon art for your game design, by the way.
Yeah. We may have to because no one else wants to do the art for it. So we're just going to give
Kitty's crayon art.
Yeah, give Kitty a box of crayons. I haven't seen
it yet. I'm looking forward to it.
Right. I need So yeah, my prototype's in.
Right.
We'll play it. We'll play it at Origins at the very latest, but if we have time tonight.
Are you going to bring it with you to the convention if people come? Oh, yeah. Are they going to be able to see it? Okay,
oh, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, if you're at the convention, you want to try it out, let me know. It's a 2 or 3 player tactical game where you're basically free for all, running around your elementals that are trying to destroy their elementals.
Nice. I'm going to call it tic-tac-toe.
You could call it tic-tac-toe. I'll call it something else.
It reduces it a little bit. It looks a bit more complicated than that when he showed it to me, like a little bit more interesting and yeah.
I love being a reductionist because it makes Chris crazy.
It's like Yahtzee.
It's just like Yahtzee.
You're fired from doing my art. let's do some input. So Sean, he learned the Pathfinder Adventure card game and mixed up the death rules. So in that game, if you ever have to draw a card and you can't, your character dies. So you're out of the game. He played it so that if you ever ran out of cards in your hand and the deck, you died. And he didn't realize until a few games in how it was supposed to play. And he's like, but I'm going to play the way I play because otherwise I'd probably not keep playing because it'd be too hard.
Well, that's a lot of these. It's just more fun. Those are the ones that stick around. Are the ones like, oh, this is so much more fun doing it this way.
Yep.
Especially solo games. You can really kind of, I'm just going to do this.
No one's looking. Yep. Just me.
And that's a good point, though. But like for a solo game, you should choose your rules you're going to play by for that game and force yourself to stick to it. Like right. I have a hard time doing that.
Right,
I'm
right.
Like, no one's looking. I can change it. But if you really want to alt rule your solo game, write it down and follow the rule that you've decided on.
So, easier said than done.
It really is. Steve is actually the one who pointed out the designer of Zaya encourages modding. He also mentions things like Forbidden Stars, which right now is not getting a lot of support by Fantasy Flight. But there are fan-made alternate races that you can download off of BGG. Mm. So like full modded, you know, races. There's a lot of games out there that have full modded scenarios and things. It's really, if you're an amateur designer or just a designer in general, or you like tweaking things, it's easier to tweak something that already exists. So it's a really good place to get your start in like feeling out game design and game balance. So there's all kinds of content out there. You can download, print it out, play it. Let's see. He thinks that variants are a way of breathing more life into a game, which I agree. He's like, this game's kind of whatever, but if we played it this way, oh, wow, I really like this. Let's try it again. He says, I would also like to add that sometimes you spend money on a game, and then when it isn't any good, you feel a little cheated. This is another excellent place to put in house rules.
That's true. I mean, it can also happen the opposite way, where I've had people who play by certain house rules and I really didn't like them. Like, I don't know if you've had this experience before, but for me, it was Werewolf. I was at house party. It wasn't that. You can tell that story. I know exactly what you're thinking of. But I played it where they had the house rule. Well, I at least think it's a house rule where if a werewolf gets killed, you still don't know that you've killed a werewolf. And I was like, and that's the first time I'd come across that rule. And I was like, this game already has almost no information. And that's frustrating enough that we're all going off absolutely nothing. You've taken away like the only piece of information in this game. Like, how could you? Yeah. I was like so like angry about it for some reason.
The no reveal variant for werewolf.
Yeah, I really didn't like that. But I mean, it must happen a lot where people sit down with a group and they're like, we're going to play this game I love. And then it's like, nope, we play with this rule that you hate. And they're like, no!
Yeah, well, in the game you're talking about, so we played a game at Origins, was it last year?
Yeah, it was last year. Yeah.
And the way that they play this, number one, it was like 2:00 in the morning, and the people teaching the game were not in any way sober.
Yeah.
And they were super ultra serious about everything. So there's multiple ways of playing werewolf. One of them is the way I'm used to playing is as soon as you have a majority of people pointing and raising their hand in the air, that person is immediately removed from the game. No more talking. We're done. There's the alternate variation of werewolf, which is I accuse Kitty of being a werewolf. Okay, now let's committee. We're going to question Kitty. Kitty has X number of seconds to defend herself. And then we're all going to vote yay or nay that she's a werewolf or not. And I'm saying this in a kind of a snooty tone because this is not the way you play werewolf, people. So
why is it a bad way, do you think? Why do you think it's bad? I agree with you, but what's your reasoning to think it's so terrible?
It doesn't feel mob mentality. Like, werewolf is about this mob mentality of lynch this person because he must be a werewolf.
Right.
And where you're like, okay, now you're on trial. Defend yourself. Oh, you pass. You're not allowed to be voted for again.
Right.
Like, what? What's going on?
That is here? Half the fun. I agree, because we played a lot of werewolf last year, and I was just really loving it. That moment where everyone suddenly gets inspired by one person's speech, and then everyone's suddenly pointing at someone. And it's like, whoa, where did that come from?
Yep.
I don't know. That's kind of how I grew up playing Mafia, was you're allowed to, like, try to talk people out of it.
I think
and
that's
then
where...
you had to get a consensus for vote.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I think that's where a lot of these, like the no reveal and the committee or trial thing, I think both of those come from Mafia.
I think they both do. Definitely. Okay. Which is the origins,
it's
I would
the
say.
Origin. Yeah. Werewolf,
Avalon, yeah, like any of those social deduction games, I'd say really are birthed there.
Yeah, right. I don't think I've ever seen a printed version of Mafia. That's usually played with playing cards. It's just like a urban game that people learn to play. Werewolf is the published version of it. First done by Looney Labs, as far as I know, and now done by another game company that does Ultimate Werewolf and all those things.
Yeah.
Which I should know because I have like every single one of their games, but I don't at the top of my head. They all do all the one night werewolf stuff as well.
Well, and there's also like tons of different characters that you can add on with.
That's
Ultimate,
what Ultimate Werewolf.
Ultimate
is.
Werewolf, right? Yeah.
So Looney Labs, they created, it was just a simple deck of cards, which was the villagers, one seer, and up to three werewolves, and it would play up to 17 people or something like that. Ultimate Werewolf has tons and tons of different roles, which is really kind of what Mafia had, is a bunch of different roles as well.
Doctors, sheriffs. I've played with so many different roles.
Undercover detectives. And
I even had one last year where this guy would put a timer in the middle of the circle. And I quite like that because it was like, sometimes the rounds can go on for way too long. And it's like, okay, there's a proper deadline here. Yeah. We're going to get through this.
Another variant of werewolf is putting a timer on it.
Yeah.
So this is a game what we're talking about, and sort of accidentally, I didn't even put this one on the list, but I'm glad you brought it up because it's a great one. Werewolf is one of those games that's very, very simple, right? So it's one of those things where a lot of people, and we call it vanilla werewolf. If it's just seer, werewolf, villagers, the term we use is vanilla werewolf. And if you're playing it that way, some people can get bored with it. Like, oh, there's, like you said, there's no information here. Where I'm looking at it is like, oh, this is the pure form of the game. I really have to read people and try to figure out what's going on.
Gotcha.
People like the additional rules. Well, those additional rules are just variants that were added by adding another version of the game with these other variants. The timer is a variant to that because people get impatient and just want to move on.
Yep.
So these variants are meant to kind of cater to a different kind of person. You know, so I think it's interesting when you look at it that way. Let's see, when shouldn't we play games with variants? Like, when is it, like...
I mean, if you're, like, tournament playing or something like that.
I think tournaments for sure. Anything that...
Like official.
Yeah. If you're trying to play a game, like, we'll use Magic. Again, we don't talk about it that often, I just have to reference it. But Magic, you should probably play it by the rules if you're ever going to play it in public. Because so many people play it by this standard method. And if you don't play it that way, when you go out there, you're going to be playing it wrong. Or someone's going to be like, wait a minute, why are you doing that?
Right.
You know, so people will accidentally not play it right. I've seen that happen quite a bit. It's like, oh, that's not how that particular spell works or whatever. But you should play it by the rules in that case.
Well, yeah, because you're going to get in trouble with it. You know, people are going to get angry or whatever.
Yeah. It's like, wait, you're just cheating. It's like, no, this is how you play. It's like, no, that's not. You know, it's like, right here, section 7, paragraph 53, page 327 of the advanced rule book says.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I sort of think get consent, maybe try and check with people. If you, instead of just being like, okay, you're at my house, we're going to play it with this rule, I would like announce, look, this is how I play it. Is everyone cool with that? Because it like I said, when I played Werewolf, I was like, oh man, I hate this version of Werewolf. And if like 9 out of 10 people agreed with me, then we should do it that way so that more people are having fun instead of the one person who's running it who likes to play it the other way.
Yeah, they just want to play it that way.
Right.
Yeah.
When you're teaching a game to someone who you know is going to go out and play that game with other people, you can, I think, still add the house rule, but make sure you let them know, like, this is my house rule. This is how I think it's more fun. Yep. But this is how it should work if you're playing with somebody else. Right. And let them know, like, hey, so that the next time they're playing, they're not like, either, oh, like, Chris is totally wrong about how to play that game, or like, did I miss something? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, if you're demoing a game or teaching someone, you should probably teach them by the book. And then you can say, oh, but you could play it this way or that way. Speaking of that, I don't think rule books should have variants in them. It's kind of a pet peeve of mine.
Oh, so it happens a lot. I didn't know that.
There are quite a few rule books that will have you could do this or you could do that. Choose a rule. Stick with it. Now, if you want to have like graduated rules, so this is the beginner version, this is the intermediate, this is the advanced version, that's fine. Call it out as such and pick one to be this is the normal, quote unquote, way of playing it.
So wait, why is it that you don't quite like that?
Because if you can't put the rules in the book that are specifically this is how you should play, then there is no like one place that says this is how you play this game.
Right.
So it's like Magic, for example, if you get a deck of cards, you can play that. The standard rules are a 40 card deck, and you just put 40 cards in the deck and you can play it. The tournament rules are a 60 card deck where no card could be repeated more than 4 times, and then there's a ban list. We can only have one of each one, or whatever. There's different rules for the tournament version. Nobody plays the basic rules of Magic. Everyone plays the tournament version because like you have to agree on something. And if you were to go to a game store and say, oh, I have this 40 card deck, they're like, yeah, that's not legal. I'm not playing with you.
Right. I see. So you then, because you've been ambiguous by leaving it an option there, then these people get into trouble. Like, oh, well, I thought I could play this way. It's like, no one plays it this way.
Yep. Or the setup is like, well, you can choose 2 or 3 or 4 of these to play with. I'm like, tell me when to choose how many. Just give me the number.
Okay.
When you have so many players, use this. When you have so many players, use this. Or if you are going to set out a variant, like, I think with Magic, it's different because you do go out, you play with other people. If you're playing a game where you have version A, version B, version C, that's fine. But you can't have rule 1, choice A, B, C.
Right.
Rule 2, choice A, B, C, so that you don't know which rule, like,
right, you're mix and matching the rules almost, right?
Now we're playing game A, C, B instead of game C, A, B or whatever it is.
Right.
Now, it's okay to have a scale. Like, Zaya, again, you have a point track on it that goes from 1 to 20. And a 20 is a really long game. A 10 is, you know, maybe a 2, 2.5 hour game. And they say, pick the number of points you want at the beginning of the game. This will change your duration of the game.
Okay.
That's fine. That's not even a variant, really. It's just a make a decision at the beginning.
Right.
So if you're choosing 1, 2, 3, 4 goals, say choose the number of goals you want to end the game. This is the reason why you would do it. And that is the rule. If you want a 2 hour game, choose 2 goals. If you want a 3 hour game, choose 4 goals. And that's so now you get to decide at the beginning. It's not like, just do whatever you want.
Right.
Sometimes play with these face up. Sometimes play with these face down. Whatever you like, go ahead and do that. It's like, no, you're the designer. Tell me how to play your game.
Right.
And I will. And if I don't like it, then I'll modify it. Yep. But at least I have some place to start.
What do you think about house ruling things where you unrandomize something? Like playing Settlers of Catan, where instead of just swishing the tiles around and turning them up, you look at, there are all sorts of different like idealized maps that you set out the tiles. Do you think that that's a fun house rule or just too much work?
For Settlers, I always do that.
Yeah.
Yep. As I'm playing, putting out the tiles, if I ever put 2 tiles next to each other that are the same type, I'll pick a different tile. It's kind of like when you're racking pool and you stripe solid, stripe solid. I kind of do that with my Settler tiles as well because I don't want 2 tiles touching each other that are the same type. It doesn't break the game, but to me, it adds more variety if you do put it up that way.
It makes it last longer, I think. because everyone sort of starts in a good place. Yeah. You don't get that one person who's like, I got stuck in the, I only have this one resource thing. But I do think it's somewhat diminishes trading.
A little, well, maybe because you have, but there's still good spots because the numbers still come out in the order they come out. Like you have to put those there and that moves the distribution around. But if you have like three brick tiles right next to each other and you have a place right in the middle, it's like this one city is brick central and no one else is going to be having brick for the game, which slows down everybody for the game at that point. So it's like, we could go either way on that. Any other final thoughts on this? Like, I could talk about game variants and stuff forever. I was trying to hook this into our modding games, and we never even got on to the topic of variants.
Yeah.
And, like, I could still have another episode That's on
amazing.
This.
That's amazing.
We'll do a revisit later.
Yeah. It's like, let's see our newest stuff and try to figure out... how to just hack every game we play. I've actually really wanted to do a, like, rewrite the rules to a game, take the components, everything that's in it, and just completely write a different game using those same components.
That's amazing. Yeah, yeah. We should do that one
I was time. Just thinking it would be really fun to, like, go through your collection and pick your favorite components out of all of the games and just make a new game out of, like, oh, I really like the coins from this game, and I really like those cubes from Terraforming Mars and all those things. Just throw them on the table and be like, I'm making a game out of this.
Yep. I'm worried this is like a lawsuit waiting to happen.
We'll call it a hobby.
Yeah. We just won't tell anyone.
I'm not selling.
Well, yeah, as long as you don't sell it, Chris, that's the thing.
Yep, that's all we have to worry about. Yeah. That's fair. All right. No, but I interrupted you guys. Anything else to add?
No.
No.
I do want to thank Caleb. Caleb's actually said, the only house rules our group uses are generally for more flexibility for entry-level games. Catan, you can't build through someone else's building. If it's there, your road is blocked. I thought that was the rule anyway.
I thought that was a rule.
Caleb, you might not be house ruling that. but this one you probably are.
This is great.
In Risk, you can't... you have to control Ural to use the bathroom. This has led to instances of wild changes against bad odds. Wild charges against bad odds just so you can go pee.
I love that. That's
I
so
really
crazy.
Like that rule.
Yeah.
Yep. And is that Risk or is that Blood Rage? Is there a Ural in Risk?
I'm sure there is. Yeah.
Is there? Yeah.
All right.
That's definitely...
You're never good with geography type.
No, I'm really not.
We encountered this in Pandemic Legacy.
What? I'm those are real names.
Still not sure that we've made fun of you.
Kanishiwa
for
instead
Kanishiwa.
Of Kinshasa.
For the record, Josh, why don't you take us out?
Sure. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider leaving us an iTunes review. Email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Jiljam, Shane Paul, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Tom Bly, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Alex Brown, Michael Ohl, Josh Arntz, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean Kelly, Joseph Lee, John Merkel, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Mike Smith, Stefan Phillips, and Caleb O'Brien. Until next week when we talk about gamification. Keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. To grab the craziest components from each game and see if we can, like, make something of that.
The Cones of Dunshire.